Fred, I'd like to start the interview by asking you when you became a jumper.
I started jumping in 1965.
Where was that at?
Missoula, Montana.
Had you had any previous experience with the Forest Service before that?
Yes, there were two summers in 61 and 63.
What were you doing?
The first year I worked in trail crew, Red Ives District, St. Joe National Forest in Idaho. The second year, I was foreman of the trail crew, same district in Idaho.
What made you decide to try smoke jumping?
Well, I first got interested in smoke jumping in my first year working in trail crew. About August, we had some fires which I put jumpers on. And it was just, I always liked to sort of participate in elite groups, and I made up my mind at that time at some future point I'd like to be a jumper. Yeah.
Did you have very much contact with jumpers while you were working for the Forest Service?
There was one fire. We relieved them. I only spoke with them maybe for a few hours. That was about it. They were only on the fire about a half day. That was my only contact with the jumpers. However, I did hear a lot about the organization. But as far as contact goes, very little prior to jumping.
Where did you train to jump? Where did you do your training at?
Right here in Missoula.
9 Mile?
The original, well, the current smoke jumper base, yeah.
Okay. Were you living on the base during training?
I lived on the base during training period at that time, 4 weeks, which I think it is now. Stayed on the base in the dorm, I'd say, for about 6 weeks, and then I got an apartment in Missoula.
So you weren't required to live on the base?
Not at that time, though.
Has that been changed?
Now?
Yeah.
I really don't know if it's been changed or what.
Okay.
So,
how well do you remember your first jump?
How well? My first jump, believe it or not, in 1965, I remember it very vividly to this day. That was the first time I'd ever flown in an airplane. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
That's no bullshit, Dan, by the way. Who the hell had it say something? No, but really, it was the first time I'd been in a helicopter prior to that, a few times on fires in Idaho, but the first time on an airplane.
Mm-hmm.
I remember very well.
Was this your training jump?
Training jump. First jump, yeah.
What were you thinking of when you're standing there at the door?
Well, naturally, our class in 65 was quite a large class. I think it was 80 or 85 people. At that time, they had basically a lot of college kids. They had a high turnover rate, let's say, during the 60s era. Now, they train very little. What I was thinking about when I first started jumping was, well, I've never ridden an airplane, let alone jump out of one, okay? So the ride wasn't that bad, but you always think, will you ever jump or not? You know, that goes through a lot of new man's minds, okay? But the conditioning was so well that it's just more or less, in my opinion, a reflex action. They condition the jump towers and all the training apparatus out the base where you just go on command, and there's no problem at all.
What about your first fire jump? Can you tell me about that?
First fire jump, that was in 65, only had two fire jumps. What year? First one was, if I remember right, in the Nez Perce National Forest. I don't recollect the district. It was a two-matter. And it was me and another fellow, I can't remember his name now. Small fire, just a snag, maybe about the size of this room we're in here. And I remember I jumped out, and they always taught us to count 3,000 or 4,000, whatever it was, and look up and check the canopy. And I did, and I had a partial line over, Mae West, okay? But it worked its way free, came in, stayed on the fire about a day and a half, that was basically it. Packed on out. It was no real big event, but I remember that.
Can you tell me what a Mae West is?
Line over.
Lines get tangled up on the chute? Or
the lines, when the chute opens, you can have one or a couple of the shroud lines gets over the canopy.
Okay.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
It gets over the canopy then. That's what May West is.
Okay. How did your family feel about you becoming a smoke jumper?
My father thought I was nuts. Really. But he accepted it. I mean, he wasn't really against it, but he said I was crazy to do it. But after the first year, he was proud of the fact that I was a jumper. Yeah.
What about reaction from friends?
Friends, it was just... You know, at that time, during the 60s, so they thought it was all right, so no real reaction, negative or positive, either way.
Is there any one fire that you jumped on that sticks out in your mind as being the most memorable fire?
I wouldn't say there's probably quite a few fires. I would say probably the most memorable fact is we almost all bought the farm on that one. It was up in Alaska. The last year I jumped in 1973 with the Bureau of Land Management. We call it the BLM out of Fairbanks. And we jumped the fire. We flew in a DC-3 from Fairbanks to McGrath. Sat down there for about 4 or 5 hours, had lunch in McGrath. Then we got a fire call and a lightning storm passed through. And we got up in the air in a DC-3. If I remember right, it was a BLM aircraft, not a private contract aircraft, which at that time the Forest Service used it quite an extent. There were 16 guys in the DC-3, spotter, assistant spotter, and we got over the fire. It was on tundra, maybe about 50, 60 acres in size, going like hell. It was pretty windy. And I remember we took the door off. Spotter went back. There's a little toolkit. Sort of like a toolkit where they keep the streamers in. You know, they check the wind drift, you know, and everything. And he bent over about right opposite, his back was opposite the door. Bend over to get the streamers out. And the spotters wear a different type of chute, spotter chute, you know, which has a ripcord, not a static line like we have. And one of the pins came undone in the back, and their chutes have a little pilot chute, it's spring loaded. And when you pull a cord on it, the little pilot chute will pop out and it'll drag out the main. It'll catch air and drag the main out. Okay, the little pilot chute sprung out, flew out the door. I was sitting second man from the doorway, these bucket seats, against the wall or the windows. And he was a blur. He went right out the door, sucked him right out. We had a safety strap on the door. He ripped the safety strap right off. From the door to the rear of the DC-3, there's a larger cargo door that can come out. It's hinged in the top, bottom, on four corners, let's say. Mm-hmm. You rip the bottom hinge out completely, rip the safety strap, and just rip the metal right off the door. And I remember seeing him flying out there, double over, thought he was dead. His chute, he had about 3-4 lines over. His chute was about 60% deployed. And first reaction was me and another guy, we tied off the door quick because we were worried that the wind, you know, the plane still flying could knock that cargo door off and it could hit the horizontal stabilizers.
Mm-hmm.
And then we'd all just take a dive in. Tied a door off, there was a chopper in the area, we call it a chopper. And they picked them up. We didn't get to jump that fire. That was probably, I mean, if you really want to get down to what, it wasn't an actual fire jump. That was probably my most memorable, stands out in my mind.
That's the guy, right?
I met him last night at the party, Gene Hobbs. He's from Idaho. He had some disability. He looks okay. He's about like you and me now, but he had a severe concussion, broken ribs, I think legs, back, scalp was ripped away quite. But I saw him on the ground because we called the Air Force Base. We got on a plane to fly him out to Anchorage Hospital. But he was in hospitals for about 5-6 months, if no more, than that year. Yeah. That was my most, stands out in my mind. I mean, I can go into other fires too, but my most memorable one. Yeah.
Did you ever get hurt jumping?
Never did. Never had injuries or anything. No.
How do you feel about the safety record of the organization as a whole?
I think the safety record is excellent. Due to the It's a small organization. Training, I felt, was very good when I was in it. To my knowledge, when I stopped jumping in 73, to my recollection only, I think the whole jumper organization as a whole, which includes a Bureau of Land Management and Forest Service, had only two fatalities directly related to jumping. One happened some point in the 60s with a Bureau of Land Management jumper, but he had already landed in the trees. He had some lines he hung up. He was making a letdown. Lines that were underneath his neck, he didn't clear them out. And when he released out of his harness, more or less hung himself. And another man, I think, at a Redding, California, when he went out the door, he had a static line over the wrong shoulder wrapped around his neck and just more or less snapped his neck going out. I think the safety record is real good due to the fact that safety is stressed all the time, and in the training period, at least in my mind, you know, we were instructed to move fairly well. Versus after I quit jumping in 67, Uncle Sam got me. I had to go in the war, and I jumped the paratroopers too. Compared with the military, it's just, I remember we made our first training jump out of Fort Benning, Georgia. Jumped a C-119, both doors. I think we had at least one fatality and probably about 10 or 15 ankle or leg injuries on that. But compared to military jumping, although military jumping, the safety record is still not bad, but I mean, there you have higher numbers, thousands of men jumping.
You mentioned the BLM has jumpers. Is that a pretty big organization, or is that small, or?
Bureau of Land Management in Fairbanks, currently, I'm not that well up on it now. At the time I jumped out of Fairbanks, there were about 70 people in the whole organization, which is compared to Missoula. When I jumped out of Missoula, started in 65 through 67, I think our crews there averaged about 180 to 185, which is higher than what it is currently now. I think it's about 120, 125 now out of Missoula.
Are there any similarities or differences between BLM and the smoke jumpers?
Do you mean similarities between the BLM and the Forest Service smoke jumpers?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Not really. I mean, a jumper is a jumper. When I jumped with the BLM in 73, we had a short fire season ban up there. By short, our fire season would start earlier in the year, from about mid-May to maybe first part of July. And then about mid-end of July, the rains would come and would be about finished. And I got a number, it was a pretty good season from May to June. July, beginning of July, it petered out. And what they did is they shipped us down here stateside. In 73, we were based, I spent 4 weeks at La Grande, Oregon. They had a sub-base there, which is now since closed. They don't use it anymore. And I made a number of fire jumps in Oregon, eastern Oregon. And then after La Grande quieted down, I moved over to Missoula in 73 for about four to five weeks all the way up until about end of September. But the BLM at that time had a reputation as being, that's where the old smoke jumpers went when it got too hard. Because up in Alaska, for the most part in the state of Alaska where we jumped, it was basically tundra or stunted trees. There wasn't really the thick trees are very mountainous like it is here. You jump in a lot of flat areas or wide open mountainsides. Easy landings, and everybody used to joke about the BLM jumpers more or less in this respect. Also, at that time too in 73, a lot of BLM jumpers had a stigma. They didn't work that hard, kind of lazy, lackadaisical organization, which we proved them wrong in 73, because I would say about 50 to 60% of the BLM jumpers in 1973 were ex-Missoula jumpers. And those BLM jumpers that did come down to the lower 48 in 73, I think we made a good name for the BLM that time. I don't know what the reputation of the organization is now.
How many different bases have you jumped from?
I was only based out of two main bases when I jumped. Missoula, later the BLM, but I did jump out of sub bases. I jumped out of Winthrop, Washington, LeGrand, Oregon, Redmond, Oregon, Redding, California, and I spent one season at Silver City, New Mexico, and West Yellowstone.
Can you give me a comparison of the different bases? Or is there one that's better than the other? Is there one that's more modern? They're all pretty similar.
Well, when I was jumping, Missoula was the biggest base. I would say probably the best base I liked to jump out of was Silver City. It's smaller in size. I mean, it really wasn't modern. We were based right out there at the airport. We slept in town at the Forest Service dormitories. West Yellowstone, when I jumped, which was in 1966, it was a little like a compartment, I would call it, at the airport. Very small, okay? Which I think now, since it has changed. But I did like jumping out of the sub-bases, such as West Yellowstone, Silver City, because the crews were smaller. There was less politics going on. Less bullshit, if I may use the word, okay? And my nature, I'm basically an independent kind of person. I don't like to get around in politics so much. And I don't like to follow orders so much either. Although I do work hard and I had a good work record.
Were you a college student then while you were jumping?
I was a college student, yes, and I used the money I made jumping to help put me through college.
Was that pretty common?
When I jumped, I would say, for instance, our class in 65, it started with about 80 to 85 people. I'd estimate that at least 80%, roughly 80%, give or take 5 or 10% either way, were college students.
Is there any particular reason why they were it was so popular with college students?
A lot of them use it as a way to put them through, basically pay their way through college. Because the money was fairly good. You could make a lot of overtime in a good fire season. And I say it was pretty popular.
There were a lot of things going on in campuses across the nation at that time. A lot of social unrest. Do you think any of that affected the Smoke Jumper organization or any of the jumpers?
By social unrest, you mean about the war?
Mm-hmm.
I stopped jumping in, all right, 67, I stopped jumping in Missoula. Mm-hmm. Then I got drafted. I had to go in military service, was in for 2 years, discharged in 69. Then I got my degree when I came back from the military, and got my BA degree, went on to graduate school in the Midwest. I saw more unrest, really, when I got out of the military than when I quit in 67. I think it was really hitting its height probably from 67 on. And I didn't really see it affect the jumpers during the years I was in it, no. As far as social unrest goes, no. It could have possibly had some effect later on, Dan, but not the time I was in it.
How did you feel, or did it affect you at all, when it was later announced that women were going to be led in the Smoke Jumping organization?
Well, I first heard of this, I think I read it in the paper, Seattle Report paper, a few years ago, that the first woman out of McCall, Idaho, she'd been terminated, would have tried to get in the jumpers, they rejected her, she filed a lawsuit, and they had to reinstate her, and whatever, but personally, I'm against it. I don't think women belong in the jumper organization. I believe in equality for women, but there's certain things a man can't do and certain things a woman can't do. And physically, I don't think they're up to the task, although I would say there are some women that certainly so, but if you have a fire crew or a jumper crew, 16-man crew, whatever, in a project fire, out for 5, 6, 7 days, the majority of the personnel in the fire are men. And there's all these jokes going around and everything like this, and I don't see how the women can tolerate it. Personally, I'm against it. I think women belong in the jumper organization.
Lately, Smoke Jumpers has become a sort of a professional outfit. Smoke jumping has become a profession. It's a year-to-year job for guys. How do you feel about that?
Each to his own. Personally, I look back, I don't regret 1 year I spent jumping. And it helped me to become independent, gave me more self-confidence about myself due to the nature of the job, because many times it was, you were in potentially dangerous, you know, situations. I personally, myself, I couldn't make a career at smoke jumping. I'm my own person, I'm very independent, I started my own business. At this point in time, I couldn't work for anybody else, even to go back to jumping. But like I said, my philosophy each to its own, you know, not to nothing.
Do you feel that smoke jumpers, or did you ever see a smoke jumper that you thought was kind of a superstitious? Carried a good luck piece, for example?
I can't recollect. There was probably a few guys, so I used to wear a little rabbit's foot or what around their neck. I think one guy, I can't remember his name, but as far as being superstitious or rubbing the pet rock before they jumped out the door or what, no, I can't. I couldn't recollect anything like that. No.
Now, during the fire season, were you on call 24 hours a day?
When I jumped, we were on call, yeah, basically 24 hours a day. 67 was our worst year. I started jumping in Silver City, New Mexico. They shipped us down beginning of May. And I worked, then after the New Mexico season was over, we came up to Missoula, and I probably jumped till the end of September or first part of October. And during that period of May, June, July, August, September, span of 4.5 months, I got, if I remember, about 2 or 3 days off. I lived in Missoula then, and I remember on 3 or 4 occasions we would get a call at 3, 4 o'clock in the morning to come on out to the base. That was basically, I would say, on call about 24 hours a day. And we had to go out to the base. Naturally, at that time, the crew I jumped with had kind of an infamous reputation. We played hard, but we also worked hard. And I remember on many occasions, some of the guys used to come out to the base at 5, 6 in the morning, be on a fire, suited up within an hour, 2 hours later, still hadn't even sobered up yet from the night before.
If you got a call, how long would it take the moment you put the phone down until you're in the air?
You mean when I got a call at my house here
in
Missoula?
Yeah, uh-huh.
I didn't have that many of them. Usually when I got a fire call, I was on duty at the base, okay? I would say there were maybe 5, in the years I was jumping out of Missoula, probably 5 or 6 different occasions. As soon as I would get the call, I'd be in the car out at the base. It takes me, 20-25 minutes to drive out there from my home. As soon as we get out to the base, it depended what order we were on the list. Sometimes they would call you out like they'd only have about 20 guys left in the base. Sometimes I'd be out right away in the airplane. So as soon as I got to the base, or sometimes where I'd suit right up, I mean, I was on that plane in about 15 minutes. Sometimes, other times, I have to wait probably an hour or what. You know, it was just that they were having lightning activity in Idaho, certain area of Montana, and they just have to stand by and wait for a call.
Did you ever suit up and go out in the plane only to return because it was too rough to jump?
Yeah. Probably the one I remember most vividly was in 66. There were 16 of us in a DC-3. We were headed down to, I think, in the Moose Creek area, down the Selway Bitter Wilderness area, Idaho. And we were about between Hamilton and Darby, Montana. And we were right in the edge of a thunderstorm. It got so rough, I frankly thought the wings were going to come off. And it was pilot judgment. He turned right around. I mean, it was really rough air and that shit. Turned right around and aborted the jump and landed in Missoula. That was probably the roughest air I've ever been in.
Is it usually the pilot's decision to turn around and come back?
I would say in this case, what I just mentioned previously, we hadn't even got to the fire. I would say we were only maybe not even about a third of the way there. It was basically flying conditions. I think that was a pilot decision. once we're over the fire or near it, it's up to the spotter whether to abort the jump or not, not the pilot. And that can be due, it's usually due to the winds too strong or whatever, which would make the jump too dangerous. I've been in probably 6 or 7 of these situations where we didn't return to Missoula and didn't jump the fire because the winds were too erratic, just too fast to jump in. By that I mean, if you went out the door and you had a good wind, sometimes 20-30 mile an hour, it wouldn't even matter if you face into the wind, you just scream into the ground, you hit hard, and your chance of injuries would be far greater, and no fire is worth a person injury to anybody. Mm-hmm. I do recollect one fire in 67. We flew out of Missoula up to near Thompson Falls, 16 of us. We put 4 guys out the door and 2 man sticks. That is, a stick is 2 men jumped at one time. Okay? The 4th man went out. The winds picked up on the 2nd stick when the 3rd and the 4th man jumped. And I think they were about 20-25 mile an hour. Jump spot was pretty open. It was on a steep hillside, but not that much timber. But they all faced into the wind, and they were just screaming in. The guy busted his, if I remember, his thigh bone pretty bad. We called the jump off. There was a helicopter in the area. They chopped him out of the hospital, and we returned. So we didn't jump that, drop that fire anymore. Just too dangerous.
Why do you try and avoid facing into the wind?
Pardon?
Why do you try and avoid facing into the wind in a situation like that?
No, you always face into the wind.
Oh, okay.
You don't run with the wind. If you run with the wind, I mean, you can run with the wind when you're higher up to hit your jump spot, but when you get down near the jump spot, always face into the wind. If there is a wind blowing, it'll slow you down. If you run with the wind, it's the way that... I wasn't a rigger. I don't understand the mechanics of parachutes, but running with the wind, you're going to go faster. You get more forward speed.
You were a jumper, and yet you didn't rig chutes?
When I jumped, I'd say probably the option was open if we wanted to become a rigger. Anybody could become a rigger, which I think the training period was 4 to 6 weeks, whatever, and you had to pass a FAA or a federal exam. No, when I jumped, probably 70% of the guys were not riggers.
Do you feel that there's some kind of an advantage to being a rigger, a jumper being a rigger?
Well, there's an advantage... As far as jumping goes, no, I didn't want to become a rigger because I didn't want to rig chutes aloft all day. It's just too tedious for me. That's basically what the rigger did was mainly either pack cargo chutes, pack the main chutes we jump with, or in many cases repair them, the holes in them or whatever. When we landed in the timber, you'd rip a lot of slots or, you know, the canopies out of the chutes, tears in them. And that's basically, they learned how to sew and how to pack chutes. That just wasn't my cup of tea.
Tree landing's pretty common.
I would say so. When I jumped, we naturally tried to avoid, the spotter would always try to put us in a clear spot. But I did make some fire jumps where there was no clear openings for at least a mile or two around, mm-hmm. And they just had to drop us in the timber. But due to the nature of the training, and the equipment and the jumpsuits we use, tree landings are, I would say in a lot of cases, probably easier than landing on the ground, although you have to be careful. I have seen some tree landings where guys will hit the tree, get spun upside down, or if they don't hit the tree right, if you know you're going to land in the trees, try to land in good where you can get that chute right over the tree and you'll hang up good. I've seen some where guys will try to miss the trees, but they haven't got enough room to play with. They're maybe a couple hundred feet from the ground, and they'll catch the edge of the tree, and their chute, maybe 1 or 2 lines will hang up momentarily. The chute will collapse, and they're still not hung in a tree, and I've seen a couple of them free fall right down to the ground, another 30 or 40 feet.
How do you get your chute out of a tree after you're hung up?
Have to climb up and get it out, usually. It all depends how high up it is. I think there's probably only 2 occasions I can remember that I was hung up high enough to climb up to get my parachute out. And that can be an arduous task, because if you're really hung up on a high tree, you have to have somebody on the ground give you a hand to pull on the letdown rope, which is tied into the harness. And you have to go out and cut it out. It took probably 2 or 3 hours. You have to cut all the limbs out and all the shroud lines over the tree. But in some cases, if I did hang up in a tree, a small one, maybe it's only 10, 15 feet off the ground, the tree was small, 4 or 5, 6 inches in diameter, you just cut the tree down. Just cut her down and take your chute out. That was the easiest way, not unless you're hung high up in a big tree.
If you're hung up high in a tree, how do you get down the ground?
Well, we had a letdown rope. Basically, what you do, we let down rope out of Missoula. It was 100 feet long. We carried it in our lake, right-hand lake pocket. And you would, we had some D-rings on our harness. You would slot it through the D-rings, or if I remember, 2 times. And then tie into your harness. And you could do either 2 letdowns. You could make a harness letdown or a cape well letdown. Cape wells are the metal slots or hinges which your parachute fits into, okay? I usually made cape well letdowns. Harness letdowns, you had to unbuckle your complete harness, but I like the cape well letdowns. It was a little easier. Tied into the risers of the parachute, when you let down, pop the cape wells, open them up, and then let yourself down, similar to like a mountain climber. You'd hold the rope in the left hand like a brake, and you'd guide it with your right hand and just sort of repel right out of the tree.
Is 100 foot of rope enough rope?
Jumping here in Missoula, yeah. The jumpers in Winthrop, Washington, and I think in Redmond, when I was jumping, there were stories they used 150, 200 feet. I heard one story, guy jumped a fire on the Olympic Peninsula, the Olympic National Park, over in Washington, western Washington, where he hung up 170, 180 feet, and he barely, I think he only had 150 feet. He was still about 20 or 30 feet off the ground. He had everybody come up and toss him another rope tying to that down. But 100 feet was ample for the Missoula jumpers in Region 1, yes. I've never had a case personally happen to myself where I haven't had enough rope to get down.
So first thing you do after you get down on the ground?
First thing what I do when I get down on the ground is get out of my gear, leave the chute there. We always got to roll the parachutes up or whatever after the fire was out or contained or controlled. First thing we do is get the cargo, get the glass keys or the hand tools, and go check the fire out, dig a fire line around it. More or less, first thing to do when you get out is get right on the fire. That's what I do.
Did you ever have to make any long pack outs?
Oh, probably the longest pack out I had was in the Bob Marshall Wilderness area. And it was, if I remember right, in September. We were supposed to get a helicopter rhino, but they had inclement weather. It got real foggy, low ceiling, and they couldn't bring any choppers in for us. We had to pack the gear out to a trail. I think it was about 4 or 5 miles. We left the gear on the trail, flagged it well for the packer to come in and get it later on. And then we had to walk out about 30, 35 mile walk out. That's about the longest one I had.
How do you feel about using helicopters to fight fires? Is that a good tool?
I think it's a good tool. I think tool the government has to reduce spread of forest fire, sure. There's no negative reaction on my part against helicopters spreading fire at all.
Did you jump out of helicopters?
Never jumped out of helicopters.
Is that becoming more and more common?
I do not know. I hear that in Washington, I live in Seattle now, that the Forest Service did have a program, I don't know if they're still continuing it, where they would repel out of helicopters. A helicopter would hover 100, 150 feet above a spot, and they'd repel out of the helicopter, but not jump out of it. I don't know now if they're being used to jump out or not. I don't think so. Certainly not in Region 1.
Did you feel that when you returned from the war, pilots that were flying at that time that had flown in the war? Do you felt that they were took a few more chances and they were a little more risky with the things they were flying than?
Well, a good example of that, basically, when I came back, a lot of the pilots that flew the fixed-wing aircraft, to my knowledge, a lot of them were, let's say, Korean or World War II vets, real old-timers, flying the DC-3s or the Twin Otters. Mm-hmm. I can't recollect any of them being pilots who'd flown to Vietnam. Now, helicopter pilots, that was a different story. A lot of the chopper jockeys were ex-service men or ex-chopper pilots out of the Vietnam War, okay? And I think a lot of them, they're basically young, mid, late 20s, whatever. I felt a lot of them, well, they were fairly safe, but maybe did take a little more risk than if there was an older guy flying a machine. Now, one case in point, I want to point out a prime example of this is what happened to me in 1967 out of Silver City, New Mexico. We got a fire call one day, I think it was end of May, beginning of June, me and a jumper named Art Kramner. And we jumped a two-man fire on Springer Mountain, on the Gila National Forest. Springer Mountain was about, if I remember right, 8,500 feet elevation. We jumped it about 11:30 in the morning, if I remember right. It was pretty hot at that time. Probably 85, pushing 90 degrees, plus the high altitude. In other words, the higher you get, the thinner the air is. So anyway, we jumped in a fire, got the fire out. Next day, we cleared a chopper spot, had a chopper come pick us up. And they sent in a Bell helicopter to get us. And he picked us up about 1, 2 in the afternoon. And it was hot that day, about 95 degrees and clear. Chopper pilot come in, young guy. I found out later he was a Vietnam jockey too. Okay, but this is prior to going into service. Mm-hmm. Anyway, he loaded us up with the gear. We had a chainsaw. It had rained a little that night. We had a thunderstorm. So our parachutes were wet. Art Kramner weighed probably, he's maybe about 200, 210 pounds, a big guy. And I told the pilot, I said, because he only had a ferry us out 10, 15 miles away, I said, better make two trips. Because I weighed at that time about 185, our Kramner 2210, chainsaw, the chutes, all our gear, the parachutes were a little wet. I figured it was too heavy with the density altitude of that chopper. And I told the pilot this. He said, no sweat. Hop in, he said, I'm only making one trip. You want to walk? All right, so we got in the chopper, and he really revved her up. He got the RPMs going, and shot up. There were two big ponderosa pine, a little down a slope from us. He shot up over them. I remember clearing that. We were off the deck maybe about 100, 150 feet. Next thing I knew was like being in an elevator. He just said, we're going in. And he didn't have enough altitude to do an auto-rotation or anything. But he managed to flare a little where the tail hit first. We hit in a steep, clear section. Tail hit first, disintegrated. Then we kind of slammed forward. Rotor blades were still turning. And went to flip over head first. That time the bubble, complete bubble, shattered. There was no bubble left. Rotor blades kicked us back. I think we bounced and spun out on the mountainside probably for about a couple hundred yards and finally came to a stop in front of a little grove of big trees there. Luckily, nobody was hurt. I was amazed nobody was hurt. Undid the seatbelts quick and just ran out the front of that son of a bitch. And that was it. It was total. It was completely total. Why nobody got killed? That was the worst, probably, experience I had.
How did you feel after you realized you're going down?
You didn't have time to react. You didn't have time to react. It just happened that quick. You didn't have time to get scared or nothing. All we did, we got out. Art had a couple of beers, popped a can of beer, had a beer, talked to the pilot. I mean, there was no animosity, you know what I mean, because he did the best he could do to control the crash. Mm-hmm. Had a beer, and the pilot said, well, that's number 7. I guess he'd been shut down 5 or 6 times. And now I'm 2. He'd been all through it. So we got on the radio and told him what happened. They flew in another chopper for us about an hour and a half later and flew us out. Went went right on back to jumping again. Sure.
I think I'm going to stop here and turn the tape over. How did you feel about having to do project work?
Project work, I don't know how the opinion is now with the jumpers, but Meyer, everybody disdained project work. Nobody liked it. Jumpers were there. Our concept was when I jumped, we only wanted to jump the aggressive fires. As soon as a fire was contained or brought under control, let the ground pounders come in and mop it up. Jumpers did not like project work. We did not like mopping up fires. We just like knocking them down and getting on the next fire.
Was there any particular type of project work that you really disliked?
Just about all types of project work. Because the main reason, I guess, why jumpers didn't like project work, they could truck us out like the Thompson Falls, 1,500 miles away, and we could possibly miss fire jumps. I mean, we were away from the base. You know, we felt lost. You know, the base was our home.
Mm-hmm.
That was, I would say I disliked all types of project works because I didn't like the chance of getting aced over or jumped over by guys at the base, even though we had a jump list where when you jumped, you went to the bottom of the list, and usually the guys that were near the bottom of the list, they send off on project work. And then if you got, you know, as other people jumped, your name came up the list, they would bring you back into town. Sometimes they didn't even do that. You get jumped. Now, I've been jumped over probably, you know, on 1, 2, 3 different occasions, I remember.
How many times do they go through the list in a year?
In a year?
Yeah.
It all depends how many fires there are. When I started in 65, there were 185 jumpers, and I think each jumper averaged only 2 fire jumps. I, myself, only had 2 fire jumps, so the list only rotated twice. In 67, I think I got in the high 20s, 27, 28 fire jumps. The list rotated quite frequently. Many times. Fact is, in 1967, I get back to the base. There was never at any given time a full complement of jumpers. You get in the base, it'd be maybe 10 jumpers there, or 15 or 20 or 30 jumpers maybe at the most sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And you'd be in the base maybe half a day or a couple of days, you'd be on the fire right away.
The guys who were at other bases, do you think they got more jumps in a season because the bases were smaller?
Oh, definitely. Like, the best... Probably where I picked up a lot of jumps was when I was down in Silver City, New Mexico. I think I got 15 or 16 jumps, if I remember, that season.
Mm-hmm.
Because we only had a crew down there, I think it was 16 or 18 guys counting the overhead. Sure, you get more jumps. Missoula, we had 185. And it would take quite a while. You had to have some real good lightning activity to get that whole roster jump crew.
Why were there so many more jumpers here in Missoula than elsewhere?
Well, this is the... Missoula's the headquarters, is the main smoke jumper base here. You know, it's the headquarters of Region 1. That's the way the Forest Service set up was.
Did you ever get to sit down with the guys from the other base and shoot the breeze while you're stationed at another base?
Oh, yeah. When I jumped with the BLM, we were stationed at LeGrand. They were from a different region, sure. Yeah. Basically, jumpers are jumpers, all the same personnel. Where it differs is a base policy, how the overhead run it, or how it's run. Some bases I felt were more strict or more stricter in their standards and readiness than other bases, or more petty bullshit to put up with than other bases.
Were there points of pride between guys from different bases?
Oh, definitely. Each base was better than the other. I mean, the Missoula jumpers, when I jumped in Missoula, we were supposedly better than McCall jumpers or the Winthrop jumpers or the BLM jumpers or whatever. Naturally, when I jumped my last season up in the BLM, there was a lot of rumors about the BLM. We knew it at that time, that BLM jumpers were over the hill, lazy, lackadaisical. But when they sent us down the lower 48, you know, we got together amongst ourselves, and I do remember this quite clearly. All the fires that the BLM jumpers were on at that time, we were going to show the lower 48 jumpers how we could work. So you could call it definitely a source of pride, yes.
Do you feel that Smoke Jumper organization is going to go the way of the dinosaurs?
I hope not. Personally, I don't think so. As long as you have roadless areas in the within the National Forest System, wilderness areas, you're always going to need smoke jumpers. There's a lot of areas you can't put helicopters or helitatic crews into. And it depends on the policy with the Forest Service. Now, within the last 10 years or so, I hear that the policy is in some areas of wilderness areas or in the high alpine areas, national parks, they let the fires run wild to burn the slash or the accumulation of heavy slash on the ground. But I think there'll always be a need for smoke jumpers in inaccessible areas, yeah. Also for the fact, too, that they're highly trained. They're like the Marine Corps or the Department of Agriculture or U.S. Forest Service.
You think that they'll atrophy down to one base, or will there be a couple of bases here and there? Will it stay the same as it is?
I think it'll probably, again, that's up to government policy. I think it'll probably stay the same. Missoula will be here. Whether it gets down in size, gets under 100 people, 50, 60 people, that remains to be seen. You know, in the coming years, BLM, the Alaska jumpers will be there because Alaska is primarily roadless. They'll always need the jumpers up there. I think the BLM could possibly increase in size up in Alaska. Other small bases like Winthrop, Washington, which I think now is only 20, 30 people, whether that will continue or not, I don't know. Probably some of these smaller bases could go, like, since I stopped jumping, they used to have a small base at Cave Junction, or Cave Junction, Oregon. It's closed now. La Grande, Oregon, closed now. The smoke jumpers won't go the way of the dinosaur, but they might consolidate and possibly have less bases, Drew.
When you had free time during the fire season, what would you do?
Usually when I had free time, if I wasn't on project work, which I abhorred, we were usually out the base, mowing the lawns, busy work, loading retardant, sweeping the apron, just so-called busy work, picking up cigarette butts.
What about when you did?
Making fire packs up, things like that. But when you had a crew of 185 guys, it's kind of tough to keep them busy when you have all the fire packs ready. You know, it's just basically busy work. Nobody liked that kind of work.
What about after all this is done? You're done, like, say, at 5 o'clock at night, and you want to go out and raise some hell. Is that pretty common?
Oh, definitely. My years, I told you, our crew was infamous. We raised a lot of hell. 65, and only had 2 fires. So we definitely kept fires in business here in Missoula. But during the busy years, like 1967, you didn't have much time because you needed your rest. You get off and off the fire. You might go down and have a few beers, go to sleep, because probably the next day or so you'd be out in the fire. But on a slack fire season, the air I jumped in, a lot of the guys partied quite hard. We played hard and worked hard.
Do you feel that there's a higher than normal rate of alcoholism among smoke jumpers because of this attitude, work hard, play hard?
In the crew I trained with, I don't know of any, statistically speaking, alcoholism. I can't say a high rate at all. I don't think I know of anybody that's a real hardcore alcoholic. I used to drink quite a bit when I went to college. I mean, it's quite normal. When I jumped, like everybody else did. But now, a businessman, I really rarely touch a beer. Rarely have a drop.
What would you do after the fire season's over? Were you a student all those years you jumped?
Primarily, I was a student. After the fire season was over, sometimes I go back to school. I didn't go to school full-time. In other words, I could go one or two quarters, stay out a quarter. Or probably go down to California. I went down to California and some of the fire crews down there and worked brush fires up until November, December, until the California fire season was over, and then went back to school in January through the end of May.
What about other jumpers? Were they mostly students going back to school? Or
when I jumped, a lot of them would go back to school. A lot of them would bum around, collect unemployment, or go down to California, whatever, logging. Primarily that was it.
How do you look back at your experiences as a smoke jumper? Is it a favorable one?
Very favorable. It was a lot of good times. It was a lot of camaraderie. I felt it was a lead organization.
like I said before, it taught me a lot of self-confidence. I worked hard. I always had pride in my work, but very favorable. Very favorable experience.
Well, I think I've exhausted my list of questions. Is there anything that you want to add that I've missed or that you want to say?
Basically, Dan, I think you pretty well covered it. That's, you know, I hope there's always a smoke jumper organization around. But I would like to say the organization as I was in it and as it is now, like all government organizations, be it civilian or military, probably the only negative aspect I have to say about the jumper organization, but I can't pinpoint them. I mean, you could say it about any government organization. It's too bureaucratic, too much politics on the job. And I think if the government was in business like I am now, if you have to run it on your own and not rely on tax monies to support it, you've got to run it a viable operation. In other words, not losing money, so to speak. I think it could have been run in a more efficient manner, less bureaucratic manner, and less politics. That's probably the only negative aspect I would say about a jumper organization.
Well, if that's everything you have to say, I'd like to say thanks for the interview.
Sure, Dan. Good enough.